Blog Talk Radio.
Good Sunday evening. It is 7 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S., and that means it's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser. I'm your host, Steve Laser, and I thank you for deciding to spend a part of your evening with me. A quick reminder, next week, my show will be aired both here on Blog Talk Radio and on KCAA Radio 1050 AM, the NBC radio affiliate in Inland Empire, California. It will be available after the fact in both places via the website and via podcast, and it'll also be available on U.S. Stream TV when you can watch video of me delivering the show. We've got a great show for you tonight, including segments about how Republicans felt that Iraq deserved universal health care, but we in the U.S. do not. Then we'll talk about what the truth is about the sequester, who is playing political games with the sequester. And then we'll talk about a critical Republican in the House who is saying no to a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. And, of course, as always, we're going to have our trademark weekly Hall of Fame and Shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. If you want to call in and talk with me, please do so. The call-in for the number, call-in number for the show is 917-889-3891. I'll try to get you in, but as always, that's subject to time constraints. So let's get started with how Republicans felt that Iraq deserved universal health care, but we in the U.S. do not. I watched Rachel Maddow's excellent documentary on the run-up to the Iraq War called Hubris, and I think it makes the case for how the Bush administration lied to us to justify the Iraq War. Next week, when my show goes live on NBC radio affiliate KCAA in Southern California, I'll give my take on this that builds on what Rachel offered and provides what I believe is the remaining 20% that slam dunks any possible claim by the Bush administration that they believe their weapons of mass destruction justification for the Iraq War was correct. That's a show and a segment that you will definitely not want to miss. In researching that show, though, I came upon a number of interesting articles about things that happened way back when, but the one that surprised me the most was a March 3, 2004 Seattle Times article from what that newspaper billed as their Iraq notebook. Now, the title for that article is Universal Health Care is Right for Iraq, and it attributes that belief right there in the title to Bush Administration Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson. And a link to this article will be on my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com by noon on Monday. But I find this article so interesting because it's only about 5 years before Republicans reacted with indignation and fury at the start of the attempt by President Obama to enact a universal health care plan here in the United States. Now, that attempt was so terrible, according to the conservative right here in America, that this effort by President Obama, along with passage of an economic stimulus, were enough justification to form a national protest movement that became known as the Tea Party. Now, the things that Republicans and their Tea Party alter ego said about the president and his health care plan are amusing to consider in light of what a Republican president did in Iraq. To do so is socialist and fascist, and being a tyrant, and means you hate babies and puppies and kittens. But here was the Bush administration in 2004 spending, according to the Seattle Times, $950 million, basically $1 billion, to set up a universal health care plan in Iraq. I stared at that number and thought about it for a while. The Republicans dared to manufacture so much outrage at President Obama's health care plan 5 years after a Republican president set up a universal health care plan in Iraq and spent $1 billion to do it. They spent $1 billion of U.S. taxpayer money so that Iraqis would get a universal health care system, but doing that for Americans is a bad thing. I guess we Americans don't rate a comprehensive universal health care system, according to the Republicans, but the Iraqis do. Side note, when I go on Fox News, some of the folks there like to tease me about how much I rail against Republicans. I think my friend Stuart Varney has said that to me on the air a couple of times. When you look at things like this, when you see how hypocritical Republicans are, how they manufacture so much drama and outrage, and then you look back and they've done the exact same thing and called it okay in the past, I think it's easy to see why I have such a problem with Republicans. I don't think I'm alone in that. But getting back to Iraq and universal health care. Secretary Thompson was asked back in 2004 why we were setting up universal health care for Iraq when we didn't have it here. And he responded, even if you don't have health insurance, you're still taken care of in America. That certainly could be defined as universal coverage. And every American's health care is far superior to what the health care is in Iraq, end quote. That's just not true. Nearly 50 million Americans did not have health care insurance at the moment that he said that. Or that amounts to nearly one in five people in this country. More than half of personal bankruptcies in the United States prior to the enacting of the President's Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare, were health care related. That's not being taken care of. It's being taken to the cleaners. And it only gets you emergency care. That doesn't help if you have a chronic illness or disease like cancer or leukemia or lupus or multiple sclerosis or thousands of others. If you get one of those diseases and you don't have insurance, you spend until you have nothing left, then you use up your available credit, and then you have your care cut off and you die. Let's fast forward to this week. I'm going to talk more about the sequester later, but according to TPM, in discussing what he thinks we should do to avoid the cuts in the sequester, Senator Lindsey Graham said, quote, here's my belief. Let's take Obamacare and put it on the table. If you want to look at ways to find $1.2 trillion in savings over the next decade, let's look at Obamacare. Let's don't destroy the military and just cut blindly across the board, end quote. Again, we keep getting back to this theme. Americans do not deserve universal health care, according to Republicans. The Iraqis do, and the GOP spent $1 billion setting it up for them, but Americans, they don't deserve it. Now, I have nothing against Iraqis or the idea that they should have universal health care. I think everyone on the planet should be part of a universal health care system in their country. I don't even have a problem with us fronting $1 billion to make it happen, seeing as how when this was done, we had invaded and screwed up their country. We kind of owed it to them at that point. But don't make Americans go without a universal health care plan, and don't pretend it's such a terrible thing to enact one when you have done it yourself 5 years earlier. You're listening to Making Sense with Steve Lazor. Now on to what is the truth about the sequester, and who's playing political games with the sequester? Folks, there are a lot of untruths being put out there about the sequester, particularly by Republicans, and so I think it's time to set the record straight. I'm going to give you a lot of plain facts here and explain how they fit in the context of what's going on. The sequester is a series of deep, across-the-board budget cuts that were agreed to by Congress and the President in 2011 as part of the Budget Control Act of 2011, enacted August 2nd, 2011. Now, Republicans claimed victory when the sequester was initially passed, and here are some of their comments. Quote, I got 98% of what I wanted on the sequester deal. I'm pretty happy. That was John Boehner in 2011. The sequester represents a victory for those committed to controlling government spending and growing our economy. I applaud Speaker Boehner's leadership in stopping tax increases on job creators, rejecting President Obama's demands for a blank check to keep borrowing, and advancing real spending controls. That was Paul Ryan in 2011. The sequester will finally begin to change the way Washington spends taxpayer dollars. That was Eric Cantor in 2011. Now, as far as Democrats and President Obama were concerned, the sequester was put into place to guarantee that Congress and the President would come back to the table at some later date to discuss more appropriate cuts and thus guarantee that the deficit would be created. Now, it was a dumb thing to do by all concerned, in my opinion. But there's a reason that we rushed into it. You see, the Budget Control Act of 2011 was rushed into law because Republicans in Congress were refusing to raise the debt ceiling. Yeah, you remember that? 2011, Republicans put the country in danger of defaulting on our debts. That led us to losing our AAA rating from Standard & Poor's. It was an ugly thing that the Republicans did to hold up the full faith and credit of the United States to what amounts to blackmail. The Republicans said to the president that if you don't come up with some kind of guarantee that will reduce spending, we will not agree to raise the debt ceiling, and the country will default on its debts, and the government will shut down, putting thousands of people on furlough or permanently out of a job. And by the way, Republicans were specifically looking for cuts to Social Security and Medicare. In the midst of the crisis that they created, that put the creditworthiness of the United States in America, of America in jeopardy, Republicans were demanding that the president agree to big cuts to Social Security and Medicare. That's what all of these crises are about. That's something that we should never forget. So the first thing that you have to understand about the sequester is that it was something that was done quickly under the threat of blackmail by the Republicans in Congress. The second thing is that the big goal of Republicans in all of these fiscal cliff, debt ceiling, and sequester crises is to get President Obama to cut Medicare and Social Security. The third thing is something that I mentioned earlier. The Republicans loved the sequester when it was passed, but for President Obama and Democrats, it represented a placeholder, an agreement to negotiate again later. So now that we've established those three things, let's look at what Republicans are now saying. John Boehner is suggesting that the sequester is the president's fault and is the product of his, quote, failed leadership. Speaker Boehner is also going around calling it the Obama sequester. That's pretty interesting when you consider the statements that Mr. Boehner made when the sequester was passed that I talked about a few minutes ago. I will say this. It was a big mistake for President Obama to agree to this in the first place. Or if he came up with the idea, if in fact that's what he did, that was a mistake too. This kind of placeholder agreement might work between two reasonable people. But even then, it's a bad idea. The president should have held out in 2011 until the Republicans relented. Let the Republicans do whatever damage it is that they're going to do to the economy until they give in and then make the right agreement. Expecting people like Republicans in the House who are negotiating in bad faith to be good partners in finding negotiated solution to this ticking time bomb is just not very smart. Sorry to say that, Mr. President, but it's the truth. What the president should do now with the sequester is simple. He has a plan already on the table that would replace the sequester with more measured cuts in spending. That plan is on the whitehouse.gov page. He needs to have a big press conference to reannounce it. Then he should stand firm and not negotiate with the Republicans and remind the American people every day that he has a plan that averts the crisis. If the Republicans insist on allowing this sequester to be enacted as is, let them. Let them be the ones that cause a massive cut to spending across the board, including defense. Let the Republicans own that. They'll come back to the table to reverse it eventually, just like they did with the fiscal cliff. The thing that's going to balance the budget is when we get more jobs for people, and those people pay taxes. That's not going to happen if we have big spending cuts. Folks, do you know what big spending cuts are? I'll put it in no-nonsense terms that you've never heard before. Spending cuts are a reverse stimulus. When you want to stimulate the economy, you get the government to spend a little more. That money makes its way into the economy and changes hands and gets the economy moving and expanding. The exact opposite thing happens when the government cuts back on spending. It'll cause the economy to contract. There's another name for an economy that contracts for two quarters. It's called a recession. So Republicans are actually trying to force the president to enact a cut in spending that will be recessionary and hurtful to those most vulnerable in society. By Monday morning at noon Eastern time, I will have a post on my blog that details the president's plan to avert the sequester. So folks, a better plan exists and is on the table, and all Republicans have to do is agree to it and the crisis is over. If they don't do that, that's on them. We certainly shouldn't follow Lindsey Graham's advice that I talked about in today's first segment. If you recall, Senator Graham suggested that we enact big cuts to the president's health care bill to provide the spending cuts. Nothing that drastic is required. The president has a reasonable plan on the table, and that's what should be enacted. If the Republicans don't do it and the sequester goes into effect and throws the country into recession, it will be their fault. You're listening to Making Sense with Steve Lazor. And now, a high-ranking Republican in the House says no to a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. Well, I called it 2 weeks ago. In my show 2 weeks ago, I said that as far as immigration reform is concerned, that there's a lot more of a split in the Republican Party about this reform than most people realize, and it's not a done deal. Now, we'd all been hearing about how Republicans have changed their mind because of the thrashing that they got in the Latino vote in election 2012. Republicans were now going to support immigration reform and a path to citizenship because otherwise they were going to lose every election going forward. Even Sean Hannity was on board. Remember Hannity saying this the day after Election Day?
We've got to get rid of the immigration issue altogether. It's simple for me to fix it. I think you control the border first. You create a pathway for those people that are here. You don't say you got to go home. And that is a position that I've evolved on. Because, you know what, it's got to be resolved. The majority of people here, if some people have criminal records, you can send them home. But if people are here, law-abiding, participating, 4 years, their kids are born here, you know, it's first secure the border, pathway to citizenship, done.
I love playing that clip. There's such a "we just got humiliated in the election" feel to it, isn't there? We all thought it was full steam ahead on immigration reform after that, didn't we? Well, the wheels have started to come off the bus in the last 2 weeks. Several people and groups on the Republican side have started to indicate that they are not going to support immigration reform, or at least critical portions of it. Now, at least one of those folks is in a position to derail any immigration reform efforts, and that's Representative Bob Goodlatte, the Republican from Virginia. He's not a fan of several aspects of immigration reform, and Mr. Goodlatte is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. So his committee will have the power to mark up any House legislation on the issue or stop it from coming up for a vote. Let's hear what Mr. Goodlatte said in response to a question about whether he supports a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants.
I do not. People have a pathway to citizenship right now. It's to abide by the immigration laws. And if they have a family relationship, they have a job skill that allows them to do that, they can obtain citizenship. But simply, someone who broke the law came here, say, "I'll give you citizenship now," that I don't think is going to happen.
So as TPM reports, the so-called path to citizenship is a centerpiece of legislation proposed by the White House and by a bipartisan Senate group working on the issue. Both plans would allow undocumented immigrants to first gain a provisional legal status that allows them to work. Then they would apply for a green card and eventually citizenship after learning English, U.S. history, and civics, and paying fines and back taxes. Now, under the White House's plan, immigrants would likely have to wait at least 8 years before they could even apply for the green card and another 5 for citizenship. Now, a bipartisan group of representatives in the House are working on their own comprehensive bill, but have yet to offer any indication that they've resolved the citizenship issue. So all of the work on the part of the president and his administration and the Senate might be for naught, at least if the House doesn't pass the bill, and Representative Goodlatte, he's in a position to stop it. Representative Goodlatte is supported by various groups set up to stop immigration reform efforts that would lead to a path to citizenship. Groups like Numbers USA, the Centers for Immigration Studies, and the Federation for American Immigration Reform. I talked about them 2 weeks ago. So will the current effort to pass immigration reform end with Representative Goodlatte? The answer to that question will tell us a lot about whether Speaker Boehner and the rest of the Republican Party are serious about immigration reform or not. Mr. Boehner didn't seem very interested or enthusiastic about it when the president spoke about it during his State of the Union address. Again, folks, this is not over. If you thought that the language coming from Republicans after the election meant that immigration reform was essentially a done deal, you're wrong. Those of us who want the president to be successful in getting immigration reform passed, and that includes groups like National Council of La Raza, Reform Immigration for America Campaign, the National Immigration Forum, Immigration Works USA, and the SEIU, they're going to have to redouble their efforts if they want to get real immigration reform passed this congressional session. Now, on the other side of things, if Republicans and anti-immigration groups torpedo immigration reform, I think Latinos will send Republicans another message in both 2014 and 2016. I think it's as simple as that. You're listening to Making Sense with Steve Lazor.
Yeah, girl! Tell me what you can do.
now on to our trademarked Hall of Fame and Shame for those politicians and others making great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. First, our Hall of Fame for making sense. Winning our Hall of Fame for making great sense this week is President Obama and the administration. On Friday, the administration entered the fray in one of two gay marriage cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, I've talked about these cases a number of times on the show. One of the cases before the court is regarding Proposition 8 in California. The other is U.S. v. Windsor, and it is more directly related to DOMA or the Defense of Marriage Act. It is that case that the Obama administration has decided to get involved in. The Obama administration filed a 67-page brief supporting Edith Windsor and asking the court to strike down at least Section 3 of DOMA. That was filed on Friday. Section 3 defines marriage and spouse for all purposes under federal law to exclude marriages between persons of the same sex, regardless of whether a marriage is recognized under state law. It states, in determining the meaning of any act of Congress or of any ruling, regulation, or interpreting of the various administrative bureaus and agencies of the United States, the word marriage means only a legal union between one man and one woman as husband and wife, and the word spouse refers only to a person of the opposite sex who is a husband or a wife. Now, after 24 pages detailing the background of the case and legal precedents, the administration started the summary of their argument with their following paragraph. Section 3 of DOMA violates the fundamental constitutional guarantee of equal protection. The law denies to tens of thousands of same-sex couples who are legally married under state law an array of important federal benefits that are available to legally married opposite-sex couples. Because this discrimination cannot be justified as substantially furthering any important government interest, Section 3 is unconstitutional. The administration's brief ended with the statement that the Court of Appeals ruling, which was in Windsor's favor and found that DOMA was unconstitutional, should be upheld. I'm very proud of how far the administration has come in the fight for equality. It makes terrific sense to assert that all Americans have the same fundamental and inalienable rights. So congratulations to President Obama and the administration for winning this week's Hall of Fame for making sense. Now, moving on to those who made the Hall of Shame this week for infamous nonsense. In third place this week in our Hall of Shame, we have Walmart. This is one of those situations that has had me shaking my head for days. A bag of Oreos was found open with some cookies missing at a Portage, Indiana Walmart. I guess it was a slow day, because the management of that store felt that an open bag of Oreos was enough to conduct a massive investigation, including the review of security tapes. The tapes allegedly show that a 63-year-old woman, a Walmart employee making about $11.40 an hour, opened the bag and ate a few cookies. Now, Walmart not only allegedly confronted and fired the woman, they pressed charges, but it gets better. Since she has allegedly admitted to doing this a few times before, Walmart is now insisting that the now former employee be prosecuted for a felony. Now, I can understand Walmart writing her up and firing her. I can understand having her arrested and making it seem to other employees that she might be prosecuted for a misdemeanor in order to deter theft. I cannot understand prosecuting a 63-year-old grandma for a felony for eating a few Oreos. I can't get within a mile of accepting that. When you consider that Walmart's profits were $15.7 billion in 2012 and $16.4 billion in 2011, that just makes this whole thing sick. Now, I know some of you hard-nosed folks out there will say it doesn't matter how rich of an employee of a company Walmart is, how little they pay their employees, stealing is wrong. And I agree, stealing is wrong, period. I almost certainly would have fired her if I was her boss. I just think that putting a felony on grandma's record for it is wrong. And let's put this into perspective. How many folks who made millions and millions writing mortgages that they know should never have been written and packaging those mortgages into mortgage-backed securities with grossly underestimated levels of risk are in jail? How many of those folks have been prosecuted? Those folks not only committed fraud on a colossal scale, they nearly wrecked the economy, and they put tens of millions of Americans out of work. They're not in jail. But this grandma is being pursued by Walmart for a felony for eating a few Oreos. That's just completely unacceptable behavior. And for it, Walmart is third this week in our Hall of Shame for making nonsense. In second place for even worse nonsense this week, we have Rush Limbaugh, the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world of demagoguery and bloviating, outdid himself with two ridiculous and hypocritical statements this week. In the first, Rush suggested that the media are dangerous to the Republic. Rush said, quote, "We ought to do background checks on these people to see which of them are mentally ill, and if they are, deny them access to the public airwaves and the newspapers as so-called news reporters or journalists because they're dangerous. They're dangerous to the Republic," end quote. Later in the week, talking about the negotiations regarding the sequester, Mr. Limbaugh said, "Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time in my life, I am ashamed of my country. To be watching all of this, to be treated, to have my intelligence, all of us, to have our common sense and intelligence insulted the way it's being, it just makes me ashamed," end quote. The interesting thing about Rush saying that he's ashamed of his country is that Rush and the rest of the conservative punditry got after Michelle Obama for famously saying after her husband was elected president that for the first time she was proud of her country. By the way, that doesn't mean she was ashamed of her country before that. There are a lot of people that we all interact with on a daily basis about whom we're neither proud nor ashamed. But if they do something particularly noteworthy, we're proud of them at that moment. It doesn't mean we were ashamed of them before that. That's what was wrong with the right wing in this country jumping on Michelle Obama. Here, though, let's make the distinction. Here we have Rush coming out and saying he's ashamed of his country and, for of all things, for the sequester negotiations. Rush, you weren't ashamed when we went to war on a weapons of mass destruction justification, swore to the whole world that was why, and none were found. But the sequester makes you upset? That's complete nonsense. And, you know, as far as the dangerous media comment, there's no one, absolutely no one, more responsible for masses of people believing things that are incorrect than Rush Limbaugh. We can talk about his diatribes against Sander Fluke, or against the LGBT community, or in favor of the Iraq War, or hundreds of other things. Rush intentionally feeds his listeners information that is factually incorrect. So if Rush Limbaugh wants to find an example of dangerous media in this country, he only has to look in the mirror, at himself in the mirror. And to fix it is even simpler. Shut down your show, Rush. Rush Limbaugh is runner-up in this week's Hall of Shame for making nonsense. But the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week, and you know it's got to be a doozy to beat Rush Limbaugh, goes to ex-Senator Pete Domenici. It came out this week that Mr. Domenici, a Republican for his entire political career, admitted that 30 years ago, while he was one of New Mexico's senators and married to one woman, he had an extramarital affair and fathered a child with another woman. He has successfully covered this up for 30 years until now. In fact, Mr. Domenici enjoyed a 100% rating from the Christian Coalition in December 2003 for his pro-family voting record. Now, I wouldn't care about any of this except for one inconvenient fact. Mr. Domenici voted in the Senate to impeach and remove President Clinton from his office for his affair and made a long-winded speech about how truthfulness is the pillar of good character. While he was making that speech and voting for the impeachment and removal of President Clinton, the child that was the product of his extramarital affair was in his teens. That is hypocrisy and nonsense that almost resulted in the removal of a popular and successful president. It doesn't get much worse than that. So, Mr. Domenici, this massive hypocrisy wins you this week's Hall of Shame for worst nonsense of the week. It might even win you the Hall of Shame for the decade. That's all I have for this evening. Thank you for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio this Sunday, March 3rd, and on Monday, March 4th at 2 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio 1050 a.m. in Inland Empire, California. Until next time, have a great rest of your evening and a great week.